Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
Hi, this is Alex McClelland, and you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
So thank you, Alex, for introducing another edition of the Tennis Podcast. And she did so because she backed us in our Kickstarter of 2019. We managed to produce 130 shows this year. We've loved every minute of it. Hard work, but we don't care. We've loved it, and we hope you've enjoyed it too. Judging by the response we've had to our launch of our latest crowdfunding Kickstarter for 2020, we've certainly, I guess, done something right, because the response we've had over the last week since we launched has just been incredible. And if you'd like to introduce a show like Alex, you can do so by choosing that category in our Kickstarter. Go down the show notes on your phone right now and you can back us on there. There's a link to the Kickstarter campaign. There's all sorts of other categories as well. I'm afraid there are no more opportunities to challenge us in our predictions in the newsletter for the Grand Slam, because those have all gone. Three of the four Grand Slam mascots have gone. So we've got three wonderful pets lined up, and one for the year as well. But there is one space still available. So if you want that, you can get it. So go and have a look and see if there's anything that takes your fancy. But to all those that have already backed us for 2020, thank you. It means the world to us, and we really appreciate it. Now, we have another edition of the Tennis Podcast for you for today. It follows Tennis Podcast Live last week that we held at the Queen's Club, and we recorded this straight after we held Tennis Podcast Live. But just before we get underway with that, we also wanted to tell you about a book that has been published by one of our listeners, Dave Courtine, in which he tells seven short stories, personal accounts from his own experience in tennis, particularly in putting on an ITF Pro Series event on the Futures Circuit in Shrewsbury in England. It's an event I've attended last year. Last February, I went along and saw this event close up. I mean, it was a fantastic experience for me, because, you know, usually we're at the Grand Slams, I'm lucky enough to say, and much bigger events with huge budgets, and the effort that the people there put in to trying to stage this event to the best of their ability and really punching above the weight was quite a sight. You know, there are people driving players around, they're putting on the events, there are people looking after their needs and just trying to make a really special experience. And Dave Courtine is somebody I've known for a long time, and he runs that event, and I've always found him a pretty inspirational bloke, because he just wants to make a difference. He wants to do something special. He wants to be entrepreneurial and come up with ideas and ways to create a great experience. And he's written this book called More to Gain Than Just the Game. And it tells seven short stories, personal accounts from his own experience in putting this event on. They're about people, these stories, that he's come across, the journeys they've gone on with the sport, within the sport, people behind the scenes, players of all ages, some of them household names to you now, some you'll have not heard of perhaps, but tells their stories and what they go through in trying to play this sport, administrators, unsung heroes, you name it. There's all sorts of people covered in this book, all with the common thread of tennis and the inspiration that it gives to them in their everyday lives. Dave says the book is one that he wanted to shine a light on how sport challenges and changes us, the way we think and feel, and how it contributes to our sense of worth and value in the place we find ourselves. I think it does that, and I think it says a lot that Judy Murray has written the foreword to this book. It's a beautiful physical book as well. It's got some stunning photography in it. So if you fancy it, if you think somebody you might know would like it for Christmas, you can get it from Dave's website, moretogain.co.uk, or it's available on Amazon. Again, go down the show notes here on the Tennis Podcast and you'll see a link there if you'd like to have a further look. So, right then, here's the latest Tennis Podcast. You join us in a quiet, eerie Queen's Club inside the President's Room, where we have just conducted our second ever Tennis Podcast Live. And just about half an hour ago, there were about 80 people inside this big old room with its huge giant silver trophy that we give out to the winner of the Fever Tree Championships every year. There are Christmas decorations up and there's nobody else around because it's nearly midnight, because that is what we do here on the Tennis Podcast. Except Catherine Whittaker's here. Hello, Catherine.
Hello, David.
Hello. Matt Roberts is here. Hello, Matt.
Hello. Genuine question. When was the last time we recorded a podcast that didn't go into midnight hours?
Do you remember the good old days?
It would have been a while.
The old Putney Exchange days?
Yeah.
When we used to do them at 11 in the morning.
When the sun was out.
Oh, yeah. Those were the days. But anyway, we just had Tennis Podcast Live, and it was great, I thought. What did you think?
Yeah, it really was great. Yeah, we were all pretty tense and anxious beforehand, weren't we? Just wanted it to go well, and it's a lot of people. I mean, I'm not a natural, I don't tend to host things because of the anxiety that accompanies it, fear that people won't show up, fear that if they do show up they will somehow be disappointed, all of these things. So it was pretty intense thing to do, and it's just overwhelming, the response from the people in the room. I mean, three of them were my immediate family.
Yeah.
So, but apart from that,
also known as backup.
Yeah. No, it was a really special evening.
Yeah.
Yeah, I usually still feel a little bit nervous recording a podcast, but compared to the state I was in about 4 or 5 hours ago, I'm feeling very relaxed right now because that is over. But it was great. It was really nice to meet so many listeners who are all so nice and
such nice people.
Seemed to enjoy the show.
Yeah, and love tennis.
We had to get Danny from the Queen's Club, who's been fantastically helpful all evening, as has everybody from the Queen's Club. We had to, bless him, he carted in an emergency speaker so that we could pipe some Bruce Springsteen into the room.
To calm
Matt's nerves. He said, some darkness on the edge of town? With like this wild look in his eyes. Okay, Matt, we'll get some Bruce.
Right. Yes. So basically, yeah, we get 80 people in the room, and they were a combination of people we know from personally, as Catherine says. There were some wonderful members of her family here. There were some colleagues from ours on the tennis tour. There were our highest Kickstarter backers, people who've entered the predictions competition and higher last year and given us such a lot of support and enabled us to produce what is 130 shows in 2019. And then lots of ticket holders who applied to be in a ballot that we ran. So we had a full room. And what we did is we divided the evening up into two, and we started with our awards for the year that we've typically done every December, and then the second half was a Q&A. So we threw the floor open and got lots of questions in. So what we thought we'd do with this podcast, because it's, well, the middle of December and there's no tennis going on, is we'd give you a little rundown of what went on in our awards categories. And we had 8 award categories in total. There were quite a few arguments about what was going to constitute an award category, weren't there, over the last few days? Most of which,
yeah,
I stayed out of.
Narrowing it down to 8 was
really
tricky.
Hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we started with Player of the Year. A lot of thought went into that one.
Well, I thought we shouldn't have Player of the Year.
Why not?
Because it's it's a redundant title, isn't it? I mean, the people we're going to discuss achieve what they achieved, and it speaks for itself. I think it's they're all players of the year in their own right. There's no right answer. There's no right or wrong player of the year. I know there's probably no right or wrong for any of the category, but I just think Andreescu, Barty, Nadal, they're all players of the year.
Like, normally, I completely agree that it's a redundant category, but I do think this year it's actually a more interesting debate than it often is, because I think the crux of the debate is, do you value someone doing something for the first time in a way more than you value someone doing something for the umpteenth time in Rafael Nadal? Like, Nadal, you know, we can debate whether maybe he's had his greatest ever season, but he's not exactly done anything this year that he hasn't done in the past. He's just doing it older, and I think that in itself is remarkable, that he's still doing it. But with Andreescu and Barty, we actually saw something completely new from them. And I think that, to me, is an interesting debate. And I tend to pick people who do things for the first time. That feels like a bigger achievement to me, which is why I went for Ash Barty. But, you know, and Nadal ended up winning our category, so clearly people disagree.
In general, would agree with you, but I think the thing about Nadal this year is that he wasn't just doing it for the umpteenth time. He has been doing things for the umpteenth time, but something about this year and how, particularly when he clinched that year-end number one, how raw he was talking about that and talking about his year afterwards, something about it didn't just feel like just another couple of slams and just another year-end number one, and then obviously the Davis Cup title after that. It really, I get a bit of fatigue, I think probably more than you two, with the big three. I'm ready for something new now, but somehow this felt like something new for Nadal, despite it none of it being anything he hasn't done countless times before. And for what it's worth, I do think it was his greatest ever season.
At
33 and a half.
I think particularly when you consider where we were in April.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
I still can't, I know we talked about this at the end of the O2 because of that interview he gave to Prime. I was amazed by that interview. I'd kind of heard, people had told me that he had been at this low ebb in April and he was considering pulling a cord on his year. And I thought maybe that's a headline from not much of a quote.
Mm.
But he was absolutely candid in that interview, how clear it was that he was going through something in April I'm not sure he's ever been through before. Mm. In terms of his questioning his own commitment to the sport. I mean, brought on by the injuries, but I don't think I've ever heard him talk like that before.
So is Nadal the player of the year?
No. But there's that, and there's also the fact that we've just about salvaged Catherine slagging off our own tennis podcast live by saying our first category shouldn't have been in it by making a good little chat about this.
But I've argued for Nadal, and I think there's as strong a case for Nadal as any, but I certainly wouldn't argue that neither Barty nor Andreescu are the players of 2019, because they are.
Well,
I think picking one is just futile.
You got the hands up. We did it by a show of hands. We all three of us gave our cases as to why we thought our individual players should be player of the year. I went for Andreescu because I'd never heard of her this time last year, which doesn't reflect very well on me, but that's how much of an incredible rise she's had. But Nadal got most of the hands in the room.
I can't remember where Ash Barty came, second or third.
I think she came second, I think. Mm. So.
I think it was third.
Wasn't my most convincing argument.
But I think you got Pat Cash's vote.
Oh, yes.
Oh, he was in the room, wasn't he? That was good.
That was by default as Australian.
Second category was team stroke partnership. And this could have been a doubles team, a Fed Cup or Davis Cup team. It could be a coach and a player as a combination. We went for, in order, Catherine went for Pierre Hugobert and Nicolas Mahut. I went for the French Fed Cup team, and Matt went for Lopez and Murray at Queens. And it was a very, very long and emotional answer from Catherine that swung it. The crowd, the assembled crowd, were just open-mouthed,
starry-eyed,
dewy-eyed at it all.
Just like I'm open-mouthed and dewy-eyed at the sight of Pierre Hugobert and Nicolas Mahut these days. It's the greatest love story in tennis.
But it's still, you know, he jilted him.
And yet...
they've come back stronger.
And yet they've come back stronger. How... It's... I'm just rehashing stuff from the podcast. Apologies to from the live show. Apologies to people that were there and have heard this material. But it's like a Nicholas Sparks novel. It's okay. So they have a glorious partnership, achieve new heights at the Australian Open, complete the career Grand Slam, and then one of them, Pierre Hugues-Herbert, decides that he needs to spread his wings and see the world with solo eyes and see what's out there for him. So with a heavy heart, he spreads his wings and goes solo. And poor Nicolas Mahut is left heartbroken. He tries to see other people, but it never feels quite the same. Pierre Hugues-Herbert tries to see other people and...
definitely not the same.
Yeah, and Mahut sort of saw him on a date with Andy Murray and his heart broke a little bit. And then at some point around US Open time, in my mind, what happened is that Pierre Hugues-Herbert got down on his knees and cried and begged Nicolas Mahut for a second chance and said, you know, it's not been the same without you.
Right.
Let's do this. We'll be even better and stronger the second time round.
I mean, I spoke for a minute, 2 minutes maybe, talking about Marion Lopez. I voted for Mahut and Herbert. They have to be the team of the year. But what I do think about Marion Lopez is, and it applies to Mahut and Herbert, I think it applies to all great doubles teams, really, and I think we've seen it a lot this year of wanting to win for the other person as much as you want to win yourself. And that struck me so much with Marion Lopez this year, because Murray kind of wanted to help Lopez get this incredible story of winning singles and doubles at Queens, which he did, and Lopez wanted to help Murray back on court without pain for the first time, and they were just in harmony, and those two stories trying to make them come true, and they did. But you know, in terms of team of the year, that was a one-off sort of punch of the most amazing emotion. But Mahut and Herbert did that scattered throughout the season. By the end, you just knew that Herbert was saying, I'm making this up to you, Nicola, and we are going to win Paris for the first time, and we are going to win the ATP finals for the first time. There was like a unstoppable force around them by the end of the season.
I never loved him like I love you. These are things that have definitely been said between them.
Yeah, and then Frank, so sounding even more romantic.
Yeah, Kiki Mladenovic didn't need any of this. She just went to Australia, took on the world number one, the greatest player in the world, and just duffed them all up and won the Fed Cup for France with her team, for her team.
Yeah.
One of whom she sort of hates. Yeah, it's beautiful.
But yeah, I mean, that was obviously such a strong team effort from France throughout the whole year. I think a lot of them played ties. But in the final, it did feel a bit like an individual pursuit for Mladenovic. You know, she was by far the MVP. Had they not had her, who else would have stepped up?
Most valuable player, British people.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's an acceptable term, isn't it?
Clutch,
I find that
now
acceptable.
MVP.
I find MVP acceptable.
Yeah, but only because you've been hanging around with him so much. That's an American expression.
It is increasingly being used on these shores.
By whom?
Matt Us. Roberts?
Apart from?
Well, maybe I'll chuck it out there. I don't know.
Right.
Okay. Anyway, there's a clear winner, isn't there? Clear winner.
Yes, so Catherine 2-0.
They're going to tear it up next year. They're going to win everything.
Third one was Match of the Year. And the choices were, from Catherine Simona Halep against Taylor Townsend at the US Open in round two. From me, Elena Svitolina against Simona Halep in Doha in the semifinals. I think I got two votes.
Yeah, this was a weak category for you.
Oh, come on. I saw that match. The problem was I was the only one who saw it.
It's like that Del Potro-Nadal match from Wimbledon last year when everyone was watching the football. Yeah. The greatest match that no one saw.
This one, everyone was asleep.
Andy Murray was stuck in the commentary box. Mm. Yeah.
Everybody was asleep except me watching it. And then the third one was Stan Wawrinka against Stefanos Tsitsipas at the French Open in round four. And that's the one that won by a landslide.
Yeah. It was just high quality for 5 hours. And I think I said that at a time when tennis is rightly or wrongly, I think wrongly, some people will think rightly, trying to curtail the length of tennis matches and change the format so that matches are shorter and, you know, quick fire. This was a classic 5 hour epic that you could just bask in every single ebb and flow. And there was something that I just appreciated about that match because you had no idea who was going to win it. They kept splitting sets. The most heavyweight tennis from both of them from the back of the court. We think of Stan Wawrinka as this absolute, just heavyweight who has the biggest shots in the game. Well, Tsitsipas was standing toe-to-toe with him for 5 hours. Tsitsipas had clay on his shirt from diving around that he didn't change. He didn't change his shirt for about 2 hours.
I love that.
Just loved it. He called his dad a zombie during the middle of it.
Yeah, there was quite a lot of aggro, wasn't there?
He went into some kind of 4 or 5 month depression afterwards, and yet Wawrinka seemed emboldened by it, and you started thinking Wawrinka's back. It had lasting implications, that match.
I can imagine in years to come in Tsitsipas's autobiography.
That'll have a chapter.
I mean, yes, please, to that, for starters. That will have its own chapter, that match.
Yeah, he felt something then that he'd never felt before, but he needed to feel it. And the way he went into his press conference, just a shell of a man after that. It was empty. There was none of Tsitsipas left. I don't know how he found himself again towards the end of the year, but he did. But, yeah, he looked like he needed a holiday there and then in the middle of the season.
He's having one in Iceland at the moment.
Yeah, who isn't?
He is feeling the vibes from that pale green haze.
Yes, and he's tweeting a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, someone needs to take his phone away.
he's not done that sort of... he's not really doing the old Twitter detox very well at the moment, is he? Yeah. Too much screen time, Steph, is what I would say.
He did an emoji Q&A.
Yeah. Ask me anything, I will reply only via the medium of emojis.
Okay, disappointment of the year was... fiercely contested. Catherine went for Kyrgios against Rublev at the US Open. Explain yourself.
Yeah. I mean, I was prepared to lose this and did.
It's the only one I won.
Why did I go for Kyrgios and Rublev? Because I was reeled in again. I allowed myself to be reeled in, and I'm as much disappointed in myself as I am with Nick Kyrgios. Not because he lost it. Rublev's a great player. He was in a great run of form. You know, like the Nadal match that Kyrgios played at Wimbledon, I wasn't depressed or disappointed at Kyrgios losing that, because that was the right Kyrgios that played it that day. That was the kind of Kyrgios that was exciting and makes you set your alarm to wake up in the middle of the night and watch him. And the Kyrgios that played Andrei Rublev was a guy that shrunk under the pressure and shrunk in the spotlight. You know, for all the bad things about Nick Kyrgios, and there are plenty that I won't get into now, there has been one reliably good thing, and that's that you can trust him to be there and show up for a big match and a big occasion. And he failed to do that in spectacular fashion. And I felt really let down.
But it wasn't a big match against a big name player, was it?
It was night session Arthur Ashe Stadium.
But he was expected to win.
Yeah.
that's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah, it's no good.
I mean, I also think Rublev was amazing.
Yeah, he was. But it wasn't about that.
Yeah. He blew it.
It was about the way it was about he couldn't handle it. He couldn't handle it. He couldn't handle the pressure, couldn't handle the moment, wasn't able to be Nick Kyrgios. And I found it really depressing actually, that sight.
Which is what led to Four Beers Law that night. It's your fault, Nick.
So, great pod.
Anyway, Juan Martin Del Potro getting injured again was mine. Pretty self-explanatory, you know, ups and downs, and finally came back and reached the US Open final, and then injured his knee badly again and is out for such a long period of time. I just found that really depressing. And then the posts he was making, and oh dear. It was just a downer. It got me a point there. So the only one I got. Matt went for
Victoria Kuzmova in general. Again, as with Catherine, I was prepared to lose this category. I was fully aware I was probably the only person in the room disappointed by her season. I set myself up for a fall, didn't I? Picked her to reach the quarters of the Australian Open.
It was your bold, she didn't. Cool.
It was. Imagine how good you'd have looked.
Yeah, she would have made how good I would have looked, and how stupid I ended up looking. All because of Victoria Kuzmova.
You wanted to go for one of those sort of unfashionable, out of nowhere.
Which I stand by the logic of that prediction, in that
Catherine's yawning.
Up until the, I think it was up until the U.S. Open. That an unseeded woman had always reached the quarters of a slam in the last 4 or 5 years. So, you know, we make predictions, go with what normally happens. I'd watched a bit of Auckland. There had been two young players in the semifinals. I thought Victoria Kuzmova, she's the one. Turns out it was Bianca Andreescu, who was the other one in the Auckland semifinals, and I did not pick her. Imagine if I'd picked Bianca Andreescu at the Australian Open. We'd have laughed it off at the time, and then it would have been, oh my God. But as it is, it's just Matt. What were you thinking?
I can't wait for Melbourne now. See, what's he coming up with next? Anyway, she didn't get the point for you.
Who is it?
No, another disappointment.
Yeah.
So, Victoria, you didn't even get him a point. I mean,
Slovakian Tennis Player of the Year.
Yeah.
Yeah, not to be taken lightly.
Yeah.
Maybe
she's had all the awards she needs, or probably deserves.
2020 might be the one.
Yeah,
could
why
be.
Not?
Let's see.
US Open semi-finalist this year.
In the doubles?
In the doubles.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, doubles is good.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
So, story of the year. That one went to Del Potro, by the way. Disappointment of the year. Not him, his injury. Story of the year was between Andy Murray's comeback from hip resurfacing surgery, Catherine, the emergence of 15-year-old Coco Gauff, that was mine, Bianca Andreescu's rise from unknown quantity into Grand Slam champion was Matt.
Yeah, but it's clearly Andy Murray.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, it is, isn't it? That's
what got the. See, I just thought it should have been in the next category, which is what I went for. But because Catherine made such a massively emotional, long-winded job of selling the story to everybody in the assembled audience, by the end of it, you could hear a pin drop. And then all these hands went up.
It was emotional.
It was emotional.
Right in the feels.
We were voting and so when we got to Did That Really Happen, which was the next category, and I went for Andy Murray winning a title in the same year as that Australian Open press conference, about four people put their hands up because they're like, yeah, whatever, Dave, we've done this one. We've all just voted for him. We want something else now. I want something new, right? So anyway, Catherine, you were moved. By Andy Murray.
But are we still on that category? Who wasn't moved?
Yeah.
If you were unmoved, then you need to check your pulse because it's the most moving, affecting, uplifting sporting story around this year or in any recent year, I suppose. I know that those are big hyperbolous words, but I've not felt so many emotions moved in me from one sports person in a long time. And I was in that press conference in Australia this year, and as somebody on, it was one of our listeners, apologies that I can't remember who it was, said very eloquently on Twitter, I think around the time that Andy Murray won the title in Antwerp a few weeks ago, she said that you enjoy something so much more if it's something you thought you'd never get to enjoy again. And I was in that press conference in Melbourne earlier this year in January, and I was sure that I would never see what we've ended up seeing from Andy Murray again. It was pretty harrowing, actually, to hear somebody that had been at the peak of their powers, somebody that sort of superhuman in so many ways, talk about having a major surgery in order to recover some quality of life. I don't know how you could not be moved by that alone, let alone the second act of the story, or maybe the third act, depending on how you look at it, of his remarkable comeback. The guy's basically got a metal hip, and the story, because of the protagonist, somehow manages to be completely jaw-dropping and yet also completely relatable. It's extraordinary and ordinary and superhuman and completely human all at once. And that's pretty special.
Yeah, it is.
Coco Gauff was good, though.
Yeah, well, came from nowhere. Never heard of her. 15-year-old. Well, I had heard of her, but I mean, it was the reason I went for her is because Andy Murray gone. It was because the way she just took over the media coverage for the days that she was having her run at Wimbledon, and
we stood on that bench, didn't we?
Yeah,
yeah.
People
overlooking,
following the lead of several Henman others, Hill. Standing on benches to just get the
even
glimpse
I
of the corner.
Was that the Halep match?
No, the Herzog.
The Herzog match, which she ended up winning. That was pretty jaw-dropping.
It ain't often I have to stand on a bench. But that's what we're talking about.
It did galvanise people in a way that I really couldn't have predicted. I mean, I could see why people were excited by the story and great, but I don't think you could ever have predicted the sort of this palpable frenzy about her. It was, I don't know, it was one of those very unique moments in time.
And I still feel conflicted about it. It still worries me on her behalf. I hope she can handle it. She's doing an amazing job at handling it. So long may that continue. And Bianca Andreescu's rise, well, yeah, I mean, it is a great story, but she's the player of the year, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I made the distinction because I think it was the story of the year because it will have such a lasting impact on tennis, I believe. The year that Andreescu's just had feels like she's changed the face of tennis for the next decade with what she's done this year. We didn't know about her a year ago, and now we do, and now it's difficult. You know, you can't look beyond Bianca Andreescu for winning titles. She has everything in her game. She has the attitude. You know, we were asked today by our in our Q&A, who do you think will win the most Grand Slams of the next decade? And once we'd kind of got our heads around the question, I think we all said Bianca Andreescu.
And I know there is a kind of, you know, recency bias and bit of a way frenzy when a young person does a big thing. But it is different with Andreescu. And look, we could all turn out to be wrong, but the unanimity of people's feeling that this is it, something the tennis world has shifted on its axis a bit with her. I mean, look back to Ostapenko winning the French Open. We were excited and we thought she'd do more than she's turned out to do, but it was nothing like this.
No.
And it nothing like this.
Never felt that sustainable with her. She had the, you know, she's got the weak second serve and she was, what was it, treeing to win the tournament, whereas Bianca Andreescu just seems to have everything in her game. Where do you pick the holes? I suppose question marks over her physical fitness are going to be, we're going to have to monitor that going forward, but in terms of pure tennis, I don't remember seeing a player come along
check
with both the attitude and the game that she combines.
What was treeing again? What was treeing?
It just was playing out your tree. Playing out of your tree to win a title.
Okay. Right.
Right?
Yep.
Right.
Okay, thanks for that. So, did that really happen was next. And it was won by landslide by Aryna Sabalenka's Instagram post during the US Open, which Catherine read out word for word.
It was reenacted.
Hilarious, I have to say, including physical... physically demonstrating emojis.
I won't do that splendid. Again on this pod, no. Because I did do it at the time. Yes. I think it was on the pod we did with Charlie just after the US Open.
The Labour Cup.
If you really want to hear that. But I will mention the addendum to the story, which is a recent development in the last week, which really is the icing on the cake of that truly bananas Instagram post, which is that Sabalenka has now announced her engagement on Instagram. She's done it in Russian, so we're relying a bit on translation. But apparently in her engagement announcement, she clarifies that it is not Dmitry Tursunov that she's engaged to. Which is...
helpful.
Just so romantic.
And she won't reveal who it is she's engaged
she won't
to.
Reveal,
and
she also
and she's largely against marriage.
She doesn't particularly believe in marriage. But good on you, Aryna. Best of happiness to you and whoever it is between, that's not Dmitry Tursunov.
Between Aryna and Stefanos Tsitsipas, we are just in a special time for social media. Fantastic. So anyway, Aryna Sabalenka won by landslide. I went for Did That Really Happen? Andy Murray winning a title in the same year the Australian Open press conference took place. And Matt, to large guffaws from the assembled audience, said Marketa Vondrousheva reaching the French Open final. That got a lot of laughter.
I mean, am I the only one who has moments where they just stop and think, oh my God, Marketa Vondrousheva reached the French Open final? Because that happens to me quite a lot.
Might say more about you than...
maybe.
I think what's amazing about it is, exactly as you said this evening, nobody's... even say, I mean, I know we are right now, but no one's saying, oh, what happened to Marketa Vondrousheva?
No, it's like she's vanished off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
Since that happened. Like, she went out the first round of Wimbledon, and it wasn't a story. It wasn't.
It wasn't.
I don't think anyone was surprised.
When do these moments happen when you find yourself thinking, whatever happened to...
Could be doing anything.
It's been a quiet...
Could be having my cereal, David.
And he has his cereal.
Should be walking down the street, anything.
Brilliant. Oh.
But, you know, I just think a young player getting tearing her way through a draw like she did. You know, she didn't drop a set to reach the final, and yet no one's talking about it. It's the ultimate. Did that really happen?
No one's expecting her to do, you know, do anything next year, are they?
And when
I don't agree with you at all.
Thing is, she's. I think she's such a good player.
Collective conversation. I mean, she's not in that conversation.
You're absolutely right that nobody's talking about her.
Yeah,
I agree with you on that. But when I saw her play in Rome that time against Daria Kasatkina on the Pietrangeli court, and it was late at night, it had been raining all day, and they just stuck this match on at the end, and I'd been thinking we're going to get sent home here, so I was quite looking forward to going home because we've been waiting for hours, and then they suddenly walked onto the court, and I thought, oh no, you know, this could be about four spectators, and suddenly everybody who'd been kicked off the centre court because the matches had finished there, everybody came to the Pietrangeli court and just packed the place out. And for some reason, halfway through that match, I think she was losing, they suddenly took Marketa von Trusova to their hearts. And they cheered her like it was Panetta winning the French Open or something.
She's a great player. No one's not... And she absolutely could do great things next year, but nobody's...
No one's
saying,
talking about
hey, what should we be expecting from Marketa von Trusova next year?
But it's a bit weird, though, isn't it? I mean, like, I feel as though... It's because she's maybe unfashionable.
And I think we don't know much about her. Yeah. We don't know her story in that.
I think that's true.
When I compared it to the absence that was Andreescu through Wimbledon and the French Open, you know, those tournaments came with a caveat. Andreescu's not here. But no one was putting that caveat on the US Open or tournaments in the second half of the season when von Trusova was not about. And I just find it fascinating why. And perhaps that is, we don't know much about her, even though she did reach the French Open final. But this is not in any way saying that she's a bad player or she won't do big things in the future. I think she will. It's just...
We'll just forget about them really quickly.
It's just how has this story not resonated, I find fascinating.
Yeah, very interesting. Okay, so that's that went to Irina Sabalenka. Number seven was Tennis Shoots Itself in the Foot. And the categories were Hopman Cup, having its greatest year and then being removed from the calendar. Catherine went for that.
Bonkers.
Second was ATP ditching Chris Kermode and failing to fully walk away from Justine Gemmelstob.
Bonkers.
That was me. And then scheduling both women's semi-finals at the French Open simultaneously was Matt's choice.
Bonkers.
And that one is the one that got... the votes. I think it was fairly close.
It was a close one.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's close between your two, which I think is right.
Simultaneously at 11 o'clock in the morning, when the gates opened about half an hour before, so there was no time for anyone to get in, and on the two, the second and third courts at the French Open, neither women's semi-final at the French Open was on the main court. And this... Perhaps goes some way to explaining why we forget about von Trusova. She didn't have a moment really in the French Open even through reaching the final. She was denied that moment because it took place on a court.
She never got to have a win on Châtrier.
On Châtrier. It was appalling that they put themselves in that situation with the scheduling of the men's semifinals being split sessions. That was the reason that they ended up in that situation with some rain. And I know there were myriad things to consider with scheduling, and rain is makes things very difficult for the organisers. But it's always the women who get screwed over by it. And, you know, it happened with the not before start time for the Wimbledon women's final last year. It happened here at the French Open. And frankly... that is tennis shooting itself in the foot, and it needs to do something about it.
I think that's very well said, and you won me over there with your argument on that. And I also feel like, I can't remember, I think it might have been you, Catherine, talking tonight in front of the audience here about just what a fantastic property that tennis has of having both genders playing it at the top level and being such a success story, and yet still sort of fighting itself over whether it wants that at times. And
other sports must look at tennis just as such a curiosity in that regard. I mean, Chris Clary said it in your interview with him last Sunday, Matt. It's thanks to Billie Jean King and others, it's in tennis's DNA, the integration of men's and women's and the relative equality, I mean, relative to in other sports and the rest of the world. It's in the DNA of tennis. And yet we're jettisoning it, we're denying it, we're tying ourselves in knots about it, whereas other sports are desperately trying to emulate that and make up for lost time and catch up. And it's an extraordinary missing of an own goal. It blows my mind.
Yes, a missing of an open goal.
Open goal, what did I say?
It is an extraordinary own goal, and it is an extraordinary missing of an open goal.
Yes, that. Football, what he said.
Football metaphors.
Yeah. It is late, folks. It's now 10 past 12. Right, last category, everybody. The moment I watched on repeat. And the three, I mean, this went down a storm. All three categories got some. So we actually had the videos.
And I think for the record, I think we all watched all of these on repeat.
Yeah, we did. So, and well done, Sarah Wollen, for sorting out the videos, who was organising our night tonight, part of the tennis podcast team here. And we found the audio and the video for Medvedev's US Open crowd aggro, and Catherine just was all over it. She got in there before any of us could.
You guys. who didn't, what sort of maniac didn't love that?
Everybody loved it.
Everyone loved
Pretty
it.
Pretty much, I think.
Even the New Yorkers by the end of the week loved it.
Oh, it's just so great.
They just love to have somebody have a go at who wasn't like
just
running away.
Someone embracing being the bad guy. I loved that. You know, I never got to enjoy the Connors, McEnroe, Lendl era of aggro, and I'm ready for it. It's lovely that Federer and Nadal love one another so much, and good for them. It's been nice. The pillars of sportsmanship, I appreciate that for what it is. I value it. I'm ready for aggro now. I'm ready for some people that
don't get on.
Yeah, don't get on and don't want to hide. You know, like everyone knows that Federer and Djokovic don't particularly get on, but they'd never dream of showing it, would they? For goodness sake, just get in some people's faces. And, you know, some days you wake up and you don't want to pretend that everything's okay. You want to go...
To be fair, Djokovic's 2015 US Open didn't mind sort of letting everybody know.
Come on, relative to how... Mind much you, that, he could have let people know.
That was him against the crowd, though. More
he could have. I mean, he would have been within his rights to have a full hissy fit.
Yeah.
Instead, for some hissy fits.
Just went and won the title, in spite of them all. But I know what you mean. I have enjoyed the Tsitsipas, Medvedev, Zverev sort of triangle of irritation. Mutual irritation and not letting it. And the funny thing is, it's not Tsitsipas who's doing any of that. He's just sort of saying whatever he thinks.
Didn't he say bullshit Russian?
Well, yeah, but that was to his face.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, but that wasn't like in the press conference, you know. That was, and
so
also,
to his face is, well, no, that's that, less aggro,
that's,
is
that's
it?
That's also Medvedev's account of what he said. And actually, no, it was Tsitsipas who remember that
but
long...
But you can watch that match in Miami back, and Tsitsipas was giving it.
Oh, yeah, no, he was. But what was really funny was that explanation in the press conference at the O2 when... Tsitsipas just suddenly wanted to talk all about it and give chapter and verse about what had happened.
Yeah, see, this is what I'm here for.
Yes.
Everybody
not running away from it.
It would be total
it didn't
deflection,
happen.
Wouldn't
yeah.
it?
From, yeah, you're right.
From the old crop of let's all have a love in people.
Yeah. Talking to those people, they're my choice for their pep talk to Zverev at the Laver Cup.
Are you going to... make us have to have an explicit tag so that this can't be downloaded in Dubai again.
That's true. It can't be downloaded in Dubai when I swear or when Roger Federer swears. Yes, it's when he followed Alexander Zverev off at one set all in the final rubber of the Laver Cup, which was manufactured to be very close at the end because they have the ascending point scores. Okay, not manufactured, but
it's
weighted in a way, isn't it? That it's very easy to kind of keep the last day interesting. It was a cool moment to watch Nadal and Federer just charging after Zverev and shouting, "Not one negative face." And I want to.
Really hasn't taken that on board, has he?
I want to see
it. It should be the moment that Zverev is I wanna see watching on repeat.
I want to see some negative faces. Yeah.
I want to see an effing come on and let's go and fist bump every point. Not us. All that. So, that we had that. And I argued strongly for that. And it got a bit of reaction, but it didn't get anything quite like Medvedev US Open aggro reaction. And Matt's was any of Nadal's hilarious press conferences. Now, you might need to explain this, Matt, because does Nadal do hilarious press conferences?
Well, I didn't think so before this year, but my mind has been open that Nadal is a hoot. I mean... one that we didn't actually put in the compilation video was in Rome, where he said, I'm going to do a really bad impression now, but he said, what happened in Monte Carlo happened, what happened in Barcelona happened, what happened in Madrid happened, and now here we are. We are in Rome.
Happened, we are in Rome.
It was just the best. And that kind of set him off, and then he was just giving these viral hits.
We go to next question because that is bullshit.
Thank you very much. And then if
oh no, you've got the explicit. Oh, bollocks.
We might as well make the most of it now. We got the tag now. Right. Anything else?
Well, he doesn't like cheese.
False.
Toasty doesn't like cheese.
He did tell us he doesn't like cheese. That's
he said he didn't want to be Federer's boyfriend.
Yeah. Yep.
These things happen.
Doesn't like meat that much.
He's just been hilarious this year. And I said that I've always found Nadal's English a little bit of a barrier to really trying to figure out who Nadal is. But this year it's felt like so much more of a bridge to actually his personality. Like, he's just thought, okay, sod it. Maybe I don't speak as fluently as Djokovic and Federer, but I'm going to get my point across in my slightly stunted English, really trying to get the words out. And he does a great job.
I think nobody has got the point across about Nick Kyrgios better this year than Nadal saying, if. That's it, isn't it?
Yeah. In relation to if he did this and if he did that, then he could be
if
somebody.
If Nick Kyrgios had a different attitude and trained really hard, could he be? Well, Nadal cut them off and said, if.
Doesn't exist.
False.
Doesn't exist.
False. Yeah.
Can we have an honourable mention for Andy Murray's shut up to Fabio Fognini?
Yes.
Which is the most useful gif in my arsenal.
You've sent that to me about 12 times now.
We were together watching that, weren't we?
Yeah.
In a restaurant. We probably turned the volume up to a...
Unsociable
level.
I just love that's, you know, a father of three out there just going,
Shut up.
Like a stroppy teenager. Splendid. It's amazing.
Right, yeah, then. So there are our awards. Medvedev got the US Open crowd aggro. Catherine won 5 points from the assembled crowd. Matt won 2. I won 1. So I've lost the Tennis Podcast Awards nominees competition. However...
Oh, I knew that segue was coming.
I was awarded tonight by my colleagues here with the Tennis Podcast Predictions Champion 2019 official T-shirt. And it was lovely. And I also get a trophy.
Who had the T-shirt made, David?
I made it.
How many trophies did you make yourself, David?
Two. So They haven't arrived yet, but they're engraved.
Because they're being engraved.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing now, see.
With his own name.
Because today we launched our Kickstarter for 2020. It's our fourth one where we basically try to raise enough money so we can carry on doing the podcast bigger and better every year. We're planning to send Catherine and Matt to Australia, flights, accommodation, all that nonsense. And, yeah, we've got to keep it going all year long, so we've got to raise quite a lot of money. And, yeah, one of those things that we do every year is the predictions competition where you can take us on. And so if you want to do that next year, you can. There will be a T-shirt for the champion, me. There will be a trophy for the champion, me. And if you want to do something about that, bring it on.
Come at the king.
Yeah.
It'll be the same trophy, but a different T-shirt. As yes. We'll do a new T-shirt each year. You won't have to have David's recycled T-shirt.
No, because this one says 2019 on. I'm the champion.
But the trophy doesn't.
No, the trophy's... I keep the trophy
keep
on my
the
mantelpiece.
Trophy. Right, both okay. That sounds like not a cost-saving exercise.
I don't care. This
you,
is worth
You bought
it.
Yourself two non-recyclable trophies.
Correct. And if I win next year,
which
I get
we haven't
another
even been
two.
Able to use for the purposes of tonight because they didn't arrive in time.
Yeah, but
due I to mean, the engraving.
The important bit is who won them and where they're going to sit on my mantelpiece. I just need to build a mantelpiece. So, all right, so well, there we are with the tennis podcast. I'm slightly losing it at the end. Of our tennis podcast live episode.
You're all right, David.
And not only have I made my own T-shirt and made my own trophy, I'm now laughing at my own jokes. I laughed so hard, I turned off the recorder by mistake. So, anyway, I'm still laughing. Catherine, take it away.
Any other business, folks, or shall I just...
Oh, we got a new interview coming up.
Wrap this.
Haven't we?
Yeah. Next week, we won't abandon you. We will be back. There might not be any tennis. That doesn't mean there's not tennis podcasts. We're back next week with a Marcos Baghdatis interview that David has done, and he's great.
He's awesome. He's open.
Very raw.
He says whatever he feels like.
So we are not abandoning you for this festive season, but this is our last show like this until the tennis season starts again in about 4.5 minutes, because that's how long the off season lasts. We're running our Kickstarter. Please support us if you can. If you have already, then thank you. We want to keep this thing going, don't we?
Kickstarter.com, search for Tennis Podcast 2020, or have a look down on your show notes that Matt has organized. You know, just scroll down on your phone and then you can press click.
Sign up to the newsletter. All the usual stuff. For everyone that came to the Tennis Podcast Live tonight, thank you very much. It was our great pleasure to have you here. Thank you to the Queen's Club for having us. Thank you to Sarah Willand one last time. For
what a marvellous room we got to have this in tonight. Yeah. The President's Room in which we sit here at the Queen's Club, which is the most incredible venue. They hire it out and they let us have it. You can have it too. You're going to have to pay, but we didn't. But anyway, because they like us. It's worth it though, isn't it? It's a cracking place. And so thank you very
much. Christmas decorations. I wasn't expecting that. I've been in this room many times before. It's where they have the Queen's drawer, and I was still completely awestruck when I walked in by the Christmas decorations. It's lovely. So it's been an absolute treat. Thank you. Thank you, Matt. Thank you, David. Let's all go and get some sleep. But not before I thank Rio with a Y, our mascot for the year. Tennisballs.com, our executive producers. The Telegraph, of course. Simon Briggs couldn't make it tonight, which spared us all from having to relive his post-coital cigarette of the US Open. But he was
Did that really happen?
Yeah.
And I'm sure he'll be back soon, as will we. But we've been the Tennis Podcast, and we'll speak to you soon.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.